can go into that later.
This is September 25th, 1994. Greetings, Commander.
Couldn't you do better than that, CJ? But greetings, Commander.
Sorry, I don't have my snake face on today.
Well, it beats the lizard look. I asked EJ and Dorma to bring special cake, and of course, even Costco didn't have anything special enough. I don't think cake is going to ease the pain that some of you are going to have as we go through this.
Commander?
Yes.
May Claudia give you a little bit of new input?
Yes, please. I will comment on this because I know that there have been some discussions back and forth, and I want you to know that every word in this room is always used, and it's always used against us. So we have to just plow straight through, and I don't really think they're going to like what I put on this tape. But we'll take up Ron first. Because of things that have happened in the past, you will note that on page 2 of your last paper, of which I have to be perfectly honest, I have not allowed Dorma even time to read that paper, although she did read this particular page and the letter that prompted some careful consideration about the paper. If Contact does not have money to run a paper, I want it made very clear that has nothing to do with the Institute's ability to function. As a matter of fact, it would show extremely good fiduciary responsibility on the part of anyone involved with the Phoenix Institute. Now, we have just gone through, and when I say we, I participated with our attorney, one of them, so that he would not be astounded at what took place in the room in the deposition, in which I was a very good boy and I stayed out of it, although Mr. Horton tried to invoke my presence. What they have schemed and planned is almost beyond your ability to think it out. And they have trapped themselves at every turn of the road. I don't know how much of yesterday's meeting should or would be made available because it was a Phoenix Board of Directors meeting in which I spoke with them. Most of you were here when Doris gave Andy J., but she did most of the speaking as usual. That's to keep her in practice. But what they have schemed and planned is, to say the least, interesting. And we're going to share that today because I have upfront input that I want to offer. And it's going to hit almost all of you who have been regular persons, going to hit Bud Clark and Patricia Young very, very hard. They have no idea how they are being used. I don't ask people to make a decision whether I'm on your side or their side or any side. Hear me well. I do not condone. We have known all the while that there are literal agents among us, federal agents from intelligence forces, etc. Some of those are to protect. Some are for gathering information. It does not matter, do you see? We do nothing that we cannot have our enemy with us. And when you go into a court of law, you do not have to lie, cheat, and steal. Truth will suffice. What Mr. Green has done is almost unthinkable. If indeed Mr. Horton and Mr. Abbott have been a party to what has gone on, I believe this may well end their career, at least in the state of Nevada. And it's very sad to see a man moving from at least an interesting and involved political career into a laughing stock. I believe that it will damage Dave Horton, who could be one of the most brilliant contributors to your constitutional efforts at law. And it has to do with Mark Williams, Rick Weber, George Green, etc. And I'm going to tell that story in here because I want it clear that there is now documentation to back up everything. And the ones who have agreed and will be at the trial are the primary parties involved. Now, when we talk about Ron Jackson and why things have been handled as they have been handled in the last couple of weeks in the contact, it is because there has been such ridicule over everything that kind of washed out, like George Green. How can we believe that there will be grandma and grandpa making it? How can we believe that there could be support for a little paper like contact from a massive gold certificate? How can we believe that Ron Jackson is anything at all, and how in the world can we believe it after Gunther Rosbacher folded? Gunther Rosbacher is again a guest of the state of Austria. Is that good or bad? It doesn't matter a whit. Whether or not Gunther Rosbacher started out thinking he could do anything or be anything or was anything, he is now, and he is a problem. That does not mean that he is not what he said he was. It is that when people practice lying all the time as a career, you never can sort the truth out. So most of you depend on me to sort out the truth. I'm not going to do it for you. And I will point out later why I'm not going to do it for you. This bunch of nice lawyers, etc., and George Green and Mark Williams, have literally set it up so that they are going to say that Doris Ecker, under the influence of Hatton, has signed all of the important documents ever signed by George Green. And that she can't tell the difference, because remember when we were talking about the U.S. and P case in this room? Or maybe it wasn't in this room. It was all the way ago in the other room. And I said, let's have a piece of paper. The subject of that was that ones deny the possibility that Mr. Russell could be there, that I could be there, that there could be any kind of a message conduit here. And Dorma had never seen Walter Russell's signature. So I asked that his signature in a book be provided, but it was not. I believe probably Karen produced the notepad where we wrote my name, then Germain wrote his, and then somewhere down there, Walter Russell wrote his. Dorma never saw that paper. I don't know whether she even realizes that it even looked like his. It could have looked like George Green. The facts are, it looked very similar to his, if any of you other ones checked. So they are now going to come forth with documented proof that Dorma can sign anybody's name. Well, she made it very damn clear that she clears her space, and number one, Mr. Green is not a dead energy. He's just working on it. And number two, He would never be allowed to enter her space. But there's more to that. The reason we have not run anything else about Ron Jackson is waiting for something of positive nature to be able to occur so that everybody doesn't look like a flipping idiot. The same reason was why we did not run things on Cosmos, because there is at least a $40 million gift to contact as a corporation and a paper. But it is against the gold certificate. So at this moment, that needs to be filed against the government along with each of the 50 states. Now, this is valid. And Grandma is going to begin to write some most interesting background material. She's going to be one of the main writers for contact as we move along and I give Dharma a break. This has been the most incredibly insulting few days of her life once she got past the total fear of having to run from the warrants and the service that was promised to her. They have built a fear campaign. They did not believe, number one, that she would be there or EJ would be there. And it worked out perfectly to uncover the whole nasty little game. And it's ugly. It is uglier than you can picture, knowing any of these participants. Especially, and I'm glad that Brent and Teresa are not here to hear this, because they became very close with Mark. And what he has done is probably going to end him in prison. Now, the reason that I wanted Rick is absolutely, Rick, the Associated Press must be pursued. What has happened, and all of you have missed it, is not the silly nonsense going on, but the fact that this has been written and predominantly played over and over again to the area of Minden, Nevada, and Carson City, Nevada. The judge knew about it. These attorneys were on the phone to the judge every 15, 20 minutes for 3 days. Gamble is sick of this trial. He is sick of this garbage. And yet he laughed when they had a hearing and said, "Oh, you mean that E.T. bunch?" The first thing that should be pursued as we leave this room today, because Dixon did not make it to the last day of the deposition. He had gone. Actually, it ended in such a disaster the night before with Abbott totally intoxicated and very, very abusive of the recorder there. And finally, he insulted her until it had to end in the evening. Then the next day becomes even more interesting. And they ridicule, you know, about, "Well, when I built this office, I tried to get 9-foot ceilings. And we didn't know how wide to make the doors for 9-foot energy." All of this was accepted in humor. And this went on by Mr. Abbott for quite a while before Dharma was to take the stand. Now, I'm going to tell all of you something here. The way Dharma receives is very, very much like a Morse code recorder or the old telegraph. Clicks, beeps, pulses. It is very, very similar to a court recorder sitting at a machine. She can read it. Nobody else can read it except another recorder. This particular recorder's name is Susan. And if she is recording for David Horton, for instance, as exactly was the case, would it not be suitable that they call her by her nickname Susie or Dorma? Her name is Susan or Doris. I do not believe that anywhere would she ever be referred to as David Horton. Now, any of you watching the skies last night should have had a real show, and I wonder if any of you know what it was.
Was it the moon?
No. All of you who go out and look at the strobing colored lights, you know? The strobing colored lights were only on periodically. All ships showed nothing but yellow or white light. There was an absence last night of color. These are signs in the sky. You're going to have to pay a little bit of attention. A lot of ships changed locations. You're not going to know whether you were left looking at a planet or a star, or where the spaceship went. You will notice that the one, I believe you call it Venus, where my ship is usually in the evening, set far to the south last night. Anyone notice that? Doesn't that stir your interest and shock the dickens out of you? How can it move all the way to the south in one day? That should have scared the living daylights out of most of you, and almost nobody notices. It becomes such a habit. Well, I'm not around to play games. And I'm making it very clear that my mission is not to Christianize, not to goodlyize, not to do it for you. My mission is not to save your nation. If you want your nation saved, you go save it. I'll tell you what's wrong, and I'll help you find the people that can help you. My mission is not to do that. Where is that tape of Mr. Call? I don't need it. I know that it got here. I want everybody in this room to see that tape. This is what happens when ones just stand up and say, I am not going to pay taxes. I'm not going to file. I don't have any money. I'm not making anything. I don't even have to file on the basis of income. But I refuse to file because it's against my religion, my belief, my nation, everything I stand for. And they come along and kill him. Shoot his son. All of you should know, just from the things that we have written about McLam and Gordon Call. But this is one of the better videotapes that have been done. And the Constitutional Law Center and the Patriot groups need to put money behind this and get out there and work for those people, not against George Green, who stole gold. Now, we'll run this paper to the very best of our ability. I am contributing almost nothing to this paper now. If there are reruns with hats on, I want it understood right now that everything that Doris does when she sits down to a computer to list it on the file will say Hatton. She sits there and makes a file label. And then I will decide what we will handle today. If I write for Horace Greeley, it does not mean because my name is on it that I am pretending to be Horace Greeley. That is a file label. It does not matter who Hecton is. I'm a reporter. I'm a commentator. You guys had better stop this ET garbage or you are going to just backtrack. Because your public will not conjure up God's hosts. I'll guarantee you that. They will ridicule you off the map. This paper is doing the very best it can. And when it is running near 100 pages, it is expensive. And there is no way that subscriptions can completely support it. And ones have been very, very generous. And yes, you could go to a cheaper rate and get it there 3 weeks later. You wouldn't know whether you had a paper last week or not. And this paper can be phased out and turned over to other ones. Rick Martin has other things to do. So does Dr. Young, for goodness sakes. Do you think a PhD in electronics and electric engineering is supposed to be cut and pasting a paper? Those are things for our mission. The word of truth about soul journey and an ability to get a remnant through, to build reasonable projects on reasonable products, to have the capability and the facilities for making motion pictures and for broadcasting. That's not me, that's you. You had to have an audience. You have a respected paper. They miss it when it's not there. But how much is expected of you in having to fight every minute of every day for your own sanity, survival, and livelihood? Just to make it. Why would I ask any of my team to do one more thing? Now, why would they be working so hard? Why would they be running the risk? You see, Mark Williams works for David Horton. In deposition, he introduced Mark Williams as Dr. Williams. Doctor? The attorney said, well, is that an MD or a PhD? He is my assistant. My assistant? That puts him up there in the category of a lawyer or an attorney. My assistant? After the day before, they made sure it went on the record about Gene Dixon. They were not going to let him in. Why? Because he is a nasty, disbarred attorney from California. And finally, back on the phone to the judge. And the judge says, let him in. The first thing that EJ said to Mark, this was on the second day. Mark was missing the first day. He walked into the room. Mr. Horton is there. Mr. Dixon is there. Everyone's filing into the room, and there is Mark Williams. So EJ says to him, hi, Rick Weber. And he looks up and he says, hi. And then falls again into his corner. And I felt very compassionate for him as I witnessed the room. He almost choked to death during the sessions. He chewed his fingernails and polished his teeth and picked. It was incredible. This poor soul. Why would he be so uncomfortable? Because he has been the hands of George Green all along doing these incredible, incredible things. He has literally, and George Green has told ones out there that he has tried to impress. You see, he's tried to keep it away from them that Rick Weber is Mark Williams. Most of you will remember Mark. He sings like an angel. And I want all of you to put it down right now. His background is in linguistics, or languages, you know, tones. And editing, splicing, sound mixing for tapes. He is the one who has compiled the list of, quote, plagiarized material that US&P is using in the courtroom. That means that they have full disk computer capability utilizing all of the material that the court banned. They hold it. It should have been turned over to the court at the very least. A few weeks back, possibly months now, Brent Moorhead receives a box from one Mark Williams, alias Rick Weber. In it are tapes. George Green had commissioned Mark Williams, and that is why Mark moved here with George Green, to dictate the journals onto tape, audio tapes, that would be offered then as an audio series. Rick Weber, Mark Williams, dictated the Pleiades series. He has the tapes. They should have been turned over to the court of law. But that's not what happened, these clever little gremlins. He sent a whole box to Brent Moorhead and said, I found these in my closet and I don't have anything to do with them. I don't know what to do with them, Brent, so I'm sending them to you. Well, I understand that Brent sent a scathing letter back. Why do you think he would send those tapes over here to be in your possession, people? Mr. Green has told ones that the information he sends out is totally accurate because he has an insider in the legal circles. He certainly does. He has also informed ones that the documents could be trusted because they came from this insider. Mr. Williams is this insider. He has been taking private legal documents out of Mr. Horton's files. And he wrote that little summary on the gold case, remember, that everybody got from Mr. Green? That was compiled from Mr. Horton's private files. Everything that came from Mr. Abbott as related to Leon's settlement, for instance, the Wilmington Trust ledger statement for gold storage, to prove that there was funding enough to pay an agreement with Mr. Fort, ended up in George Green's packet. The most private information, especially a corporation the size of Wilmington Trust, to allow that to happen is enough to bring charges against the ones who did it. And they blew it because they sent copies of Mr. Ecker's deposition out. George Green had those copies out to everybody on the list before it was even corrected for typographical errors. And in some instances, the very month was incorrect, and it has now shown up on every attorney adversary to this bunch It is listed on their interrogatory question number one. This does not look nice for attorneys. Simultaneously working with Mr. Riley and Mr. Perry, who has no interest whatsoever, and you would have thought that Honorable Barrister Abbott was going to fall off his chair when he said, "Are you," after hearing an explanation of corporate structure and how these demand notes were handled properly, he was almost in a state of shock. "I had no idea," he said. "This is corporate business. And what does Mr. Perry have invested in the Institute, if you know, Mr. Ecker?" "Nothing." "Well, I mean, is there any corporation over which he might sign names?" "No, sir." "Zero, zip." My observation about one Perry, Luke Perry, is that he is an overweight grub, parasite, trying to take and steal his stepmother's only source of retirement. Now, this is vile. This is absolutely vile. Why would it be worth it? Why is this struggle worth it? And we met the Institute yesterday. Do you settle? Well, I want to tell you something. You don't have to settle anything. But it will be ugly, and it will be discounting, and it will be brutal for everyone involved. So the possibilities are you may want to come to some kind of a settlement. The facts are that now ones have been contacted, that Mr. Green has contacted, and the major players in the game, including the lender, the gifter, will be at that trial. So all of you who have an interest in the Institute in any way whatsoever better be marking your plans now if you want to be a participant or just go play and just go watch. It'll give you an opportunity to meet some of your most gracious friends. And they will be over after court's meeting, at any rate on the 10th, I believe. What day is this trial? The 3rd? It would give you all a nice opportunity to meet Mr. David Overton, Miss Sherry Yount, Ricky Bushnell, possibly even Paul Lienthal from over across on the East Coast. There is not one so far that will not come if all they have to be is notified. Terry Dotson, precious Terry, comes anyway. Mr. Green is going to have to confront his lies or make explanation. Now, Bud, they plan to use Bud Clark as having settled. Bud Clark, I want everyone in this room to know, was settled because Bud Clark had surgery and was diagnosed as having carcinoma of the bowel. There has never, ever been one blink of an eye not to settle with anyone, even while funds are frozen because of these lawsuits, when there is need. But they're going to use him. They're going to use him. Patricia, my godchild, you are just in the middle. And I don't know how to get you out of there. During the course of this conversation, Mark Williams is in there, and I have to share this again. When Dorma sat down to be sworn in, raise your hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And she said, is that on the Kol Nidri, the Talmud, the Koran, the Torah, the Bible? What am I swearing on? And, of course, the attorney, her own attorney, is about to choke. And she said, I don't know what to say. And he said, you say I do. In other words, shut up. But how do you spell Kol Nidri? Well, she couldn't come up with that either. She said, my oath is enough. My word is enough. I do not lie. I base my entire life on truth. And my word is my word. Oh, well, okay. Now, Lizard, it's interesting to note that while ones are getting ready, even Gene Dixon, in his humorous way, leaned over to Norma and said, you know, I don't know what it is, but Mr. Horton looks like a lizard. He had turned pale, his face had elongated, and he was sitting there licking his lips, you know, flicking his tongue. And so there was this little bit of interest there. And so when she sits down and we go through the oath, terrible bit, and she said, well, I'm sorry, but I have witnessed some things in the last 2 days that I will not sit here and be either intimidated nor treated without any kind of respect whatsoever. And they're all huffed up. And Day Williams, our attorney, gets up and he said, yes, and to have Mr. Abbott drinking all afternoon during these depositions and then being drunk by evening and insulting the record, oh, my goodness, this brought down the house. And Mr. Horton cut off everything right fast and went on the record, you know, now turned to the record and said, for the record, Mr. Abbott was not drinking during the deposition. Well, he must have had it hidden in his book somewhere. And he could not stand at the end of the evening. And this poor recorder had been going since early morning. This deposition had not been, but she had already been busy. So her day had started at like 7. And it was now going on to 9 o'clock. And she and they were arguing amongst themselves, Horton and Abbott, over what questions to ask and how to ask them. And she finally said, gentlemen, I cannot do this any longer. You are just arguing. I cannot type for both of you at the same time. And I just can't go on any longer this evening. I'm exhausted. And Mr. Abbott got up and threw down his books. And he turned to her and he said, what kind of a recorder are you? We are lawyers and you will go till we are through. And she started to cry. And she said, I can't. I'm exhausted. Well, we will get a recorder that can. And, of course, that ended it. That ended it. And he was ashen gray. And the first thing that crosses everybody's mind is he's going to drop of a heart attack. Ashen gray, and his face had just fallen. And he staggered as he stood there, catching himself on the table. During these 2 days, while Mr. Horton would be trying to ask questions, Mr. Abbott would point out the window and the beautiful clouds. And they only rain on sinners. And E.J. at that point looked out the window and said, well, I guess we're going to have a downpour this afternoon. And he would talk about the carved table in the middle of a question. And he would talk about the pictures out on his wall with shaking hands with Reagan and Nixon and point out his documents that made him undersecretary of this garbage and that garbage and the other. And he has this big case for his retirement program going 9 years with ones in Italy. And this is important because it is exactly what is happening in the United States. His clients in Italy lost their land 1 cent on the dollar to NATO, to your boys. And in that case come up the names Alexander Haig, a little attorney by the name of Richard Nixon. They are doing it to you today. They are claiming your lands as wetlands. You're getting nothing for it except hell. That's what you're doing. His other means of retirement is this case, Mr. Leon Fortz. Now, he must have wasted at least half of the time in these depositions, and guess who was paying for it? Mr. Leon Fort. And finally, there was a lunch break, and EJ said, I cannot stand this. John Abbey is the institute attorney. Mr. Abbott was trying to establish that Mr. Abbey was also Ecker's attorney because he had papers to serve for collection, for all these things, the terror tactics. In other words, I'm going to serve papers the minute it is appropriate and convenient and make the biggest splash on these people. Or I'm going to serve them on their attorney if they try to hide from me or whatever might be going through his mind. Well, Mr. Abbey said, I'm not their attorney. I represent the Phoenix Institute. So all the way through, he would try to get Mr. Abbey to slip and say, I'm their attorney. And finally, once, under just the silliest of circumstances, he said, threw up his hands. He said, well, I'll tell you for this, I am their attorney. EJ says, isn't there some way we can work this out so that Leon does not pay for this? So that there, he said, I cannot in any kind of justification.